Asi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai, Iskan Founder Shari, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda, all glories to the Sim of Devotees, all glories to the Sim of Devotees, all glories to the Sim of Devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Garanga, Yom Vishnu Hare Krishna Sagrave, Shinati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Ki Nani, Namaste Sarasari, Gaur Vandashan, Vishesha Shri, Asya Chavisitam, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 10, Verse 23. In the chapter, Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Vastuna mridukatinya.
Vastuna mridukatinya.
Lagu gur voshnas sititam.
Lagu gur voshnas sititam.
Jagurikshatastva nirvana.
Jagurikshatastva nirvana.
Asyam roma mahi vuha. Tetra chantur bahir vatas. Tvacha labda guno vrita. We have six lines on this one. Vastuno mridu kathina. Try again. Vastuno mridu kathinya. Lagu gur voshnashi tatam. Jibrikshatastva nirvana. Tashyam roma mahi ruha. Tatra chantar bahir vatas. Vacha labha guno vrita. Others chant.
Roma
Okay. Word.
Vastuna.
Vastuna.
Of all matter.
Of all matter.
Meridu.
Meridu.
Softness.
Softness.
Katinya.
Katinya.
Hardness.
Hardness.
Laghu.
Laghu.
Lightness.
Lightness.
Guru.
Guru.
Heaviness.
Heaviness.
Oshna.
Oshna.
Warmness.
Warmness.
Chittitam.
Chittitam.
Wholeness.
Jigrikshita.
Desiring to perceive.
Desiring to perceive.
The touch sensation.
The touch sensation.
Nirvina.
Distributed.
Dasyam.
In the skin.
Roma.
Hairs on the body.
Vahi Ruha. As well as the trees, the controlling deities. Tetra. There. Cha.
Also.
Anta.
Within.
Vahi.
Outside.
Vata
Tvacha.
The sense of touch or the skin.
Labda.
Having been perceived. Guna.
Objects of sense perception.
Vritta.
Generated.
Translation purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. When there was a desire to perceive the physical characteristics of matter, such as softness, hardness, warmth, cold, lightness, and heaviness, the background of sensation, the skin pores, the hairs on the body and their controlling deities, the trees, were generated. Within and outside the skin is a covering of air through which sense perception became prominent. Report. The physical characteristics of matter, such as softness, are subjects to sense perception, are subject of sense perception, and thus physical knowledge is the subject matter of touch sensation. One can measure the temperature of matter by touching with the hand. One can measure the weight of an object by lifting it with the hand, and thus estimate its heaviness or lightness. The skin pores, and the hairs on the body are all interdependent with the touch sensation. The air blowing within and outside the skin is also an object of sense perception. The sense perception is also a source of knowledge, and therefore it is suggested here that physical or physiological knowledge is subordinate to the knowledge of the self, as above mentioned. Knowledge of self can expand to knowledge of phenomena, but physical knowledge cannot lead to knowledge of the self. There is, however, an intimate relation between the hairs on the body and the vegetation on the body of the earth. The vegetables are nourishment for the skin, both as food and medicine, is stated in the third canto, Tvacham Asya Vinir Bhinam Vishvur Dishnam Ashadidi Ashadi. And that verse from the third canto is 3:6:18, which is, when there was a separate manifestation of skin, the controlling deities of sensation and their different parts entered into it, and thus the living entities feel itching and happiness due to touch. Omagyana Prandasya Gnanjana Salakaya Chaksuru Mutanina Tasma Sri Gurave Namaha Panchako Patrivishcha Kripasin Vivevacha Patitano Pavane Bio Vaishnavevi and Mon Maha. So, the manifestation of the different senses are being described, first coming from Mahavishnu, and of course the Bharata Purusha is mentioned here, and each one of the senses, the sense organs, the sense objects, and presiding deity, the senses are gone through one after the other. And now today, the sense of touch is described. Now it's interesting because both the skin and the hairs on the body are mentioned. And it's actually described by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in his purport that both are sense organs. Both the hair on the body and the skin itself are both considered sense organs of touch. And going back to the other verse the Prabhupada quoted, 3:6:18, he also quotes Vishwanatha's purport to that verse where he states the deity controlling the skin is Vayu, because we're talking about the air blowing inside and outside of the skin. So Vayu is very connected with the sense of touch through his control of air, obviously, the wind. So It's also described that the deity controlling here is the plants or trees. And so that's also mentioned. It's explained that for the sense organ for the sense organ of the skin, Vayu is the controlling deity, and for the sense organ of the hairs on the body, the controlling deity is the plants or trees. So that kind of explains a little bit. I think it's slightly confusing. So basically, another way we look at this, which was described a few verses earlier, is in terms of the Adi-Daivic, Adi-Atmic, and Adi-Buddhic, that the Vayu or the trees is the Adi-Daivic, controlling deity, the skin or the hair is sense organs, is the Adi-Atmic, and the receptor of the sense objects that it encounters in this world is touch. That's the Adi-Bhuta. So touch, like all senses, is a knowledge-acquiring sense. So from the sense of touch, we can understand, as described here in the verse by Śrīla Prabhupāda, lightness or heaviness, softness or hardness, warmth or coolness. And it's also explained that one can feel sensation both externally and internally. As we can understand it easily, we often have internal feelings, like say if we have a headache, or something internally within our organs or something. You don't feel that exactly through the skin, but you feel it inside. So both of these are related. These are both senses of touch. It's described both an internal and an external sense of touch. So that is about the extent of my knowledge on the subject matter. So fortunately, but Srila Prabhupada made a very, very interesting point within this purport that I'm going to talk about somewhat. Prabhupada said, it is suggested here that physical or physiological knowledge is subordinate to the knowledge of the self, as above mentioned. Knowledge of self can expand to the knowledge of phenomena, but physical knowledge cannot lead to knowledge of the self. So that's a very important, interesting statement. In other words, if we have spiritual knowledge, a knowledge of the self as differentiated from the body, then we can not only understand spiritual knowledge, but we can also understand material phenomena around us. But it does not work conversely. If we understand only the material and only sense perception, only physical knowledge, that cannot lead to higher knowledge of the self, which I think seems fairly evident to devotees at least. So broadly speaking, the way that we're discussing here, there are two types of knowledge, there's material knowledge and spiritual knowledge. And of course, within spiritual knowledge, there are many different categories. In terms of what we read in the Bhagavatam, sometimes it's described, Jiva Goswami describes in the Bhakti Sandarbha that there are two types of pastimes of Krishna that the Bhagavatam describes. Those that are describing actions like the creation of the universe, and those which are describing the activities of the Leela avatars or Krishna's personal pastimes, personal Leela. And of course, he says, the second type is superior. And he quotes Bhagavatam 2.6.46, O Narada, now I shall state one after another the transcendental incarnations of the Lord, known as Leela avatars. Hearing of their activities counteracts all foul matters accumulated in the ear. These pastimes are pleasing to hear and are to be relished. Therefore, they are in my heart. So the pastimes of Krishna Leela, of course, are probably most interesting, compelling, attractive to devotees. And so the question always comes up, then why do we study so much about the creation of the material world? I think we've kind of gone through the sequence now at least twice, haven't we? And the third canto again describes the process of creation, and it keeps coming up, of how the material world sort of sequentially unfolds, by the will of the Lord and through the Purusha avatars, step by step, and to see what we create here. Now, Why do we need to do this? In a purport, Prabhupada was talking about interest in the transcendental of the Lord. He says, the devotees of the Lord, however, know well how the creative forces work concurrently by the action and reaction of material energy of the Lord. Therefore, they take more interest in the transcendental activities of the Lord as he incarnates himself on the surface of the world. In other words, our interest in the activities of Krishna and Krishna's Leela, when he comes to the earth, as described in Srimad Bhagavatam, comes after we understand his activities of material creation. In other words, If we didn't know who Krishna is, why would we be interested in his pastimes? Why would we want to know about all these activities described in the 10th canto if we didn't really know who Krishna is? But by understanding the nature of Krishna, understanding that he is actually God, he is the supreme creator, the supreme maintainer, everything is coming from him, everything is controlled by him, and it's a very logical, sequential, step-by-step process. We don't have some vague statements that, oh yeah, God created the world, and take it at that. No, we're hearing, you know, every single step of the process, very scientifically, how everything is manifest in this material world. So the idea, of course, is by the time we understand systematically all that, all knowledge of creation, we understand clearly Krishna's position and how he is behind everything, then we're ready to enter into the 10th canto and Krishna's Leela. Okay, so that was a little aside, going back to what we're talking about today. Well, the other thing just to mention is, in terms of creation, knowledge of creation is purely spiritual. So sometimes Prabhupada say we don't really distinguish. Everything about Krishna is equally relishable because it's all related to Krishna, and the devotee sees that. If something is connected with Krishna, then that's important to us, and that's relishable, and we want to hear about it. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is not concerned with knowledge of this material world and how the material energy acts and reacts unless it is connected with Krishna. Right? Matter unconnected to Krishna basically is Maya. It's illusion and has very little interest to devotees. But when we see everything in relationship with Krishna, how everything can be used in Krishna's service, etc., then it becomes of interest to the devotees. And our Vedic literature gives us this knowledge so that we can fully understand everything. Bhagavad Gita 7.2 says, I shall now declare unto you in full this knowledge, both phenomenal and numinous. This being known, nothing further shall be remained to know, for you to know. So in other words, phenomenal and numinous, what does that mean? Basically material and spiritual. Phenomenal is the things of this material world that we see and perceive. Phenomena. You know, objects of the material world. Numinous means basically spiritual, is what Prabhupada is using it here. And I think that is the way it's used philosophically. We don't have CTD here to confirm that, do we? But anyway, that it has basically the same meaning in philosophical understanding. So the Vedic literature describes both. So complete knowledge can be found. And in Srila Prabhupada's purport today, he says knowledge of self can be expanded to knowledge of phenomena. Well, how exactly does that work? In his purport to 7.2, Srila Prabhupada says, when the cause of all causes becomes known, then everything knowable becomes known, and nothing remains unknown. This starts with a simple proposition that Krishna is everything. There's nothing outside of Krishna. We just went through the Chatur Shlokas, and that was one of the ones to clearly find it. There is nothing. If you see anything outside of me, that's illusion. Right? So in other words, everything is related to Krishna. Everything is part of Krishna. If nothing is different from Krishna, and we know that, then we basically know at least something about everything. That doesn't mean that we automatically know every scientific detail of everything, but we know the general idea. We know the important principles involved between, and what is the difference between matter and spirit. Sometimes this is talked about knowledge of nescience and knowledge of transcendence. So knowledge of nescience is actually dependent upon knowledge of transcendence. Now, you can be in nescience without knowing transcendence, but to know nescience, to understand it, you have to also understand spiritual knowledge. So after discussing how spiritual knowledge can reveal phenomena's material world, and of course, the other aspect is that for the devotee, Krishna is the supersoul within the heart, can reveal anything to the devotee. Whatever the devotee needs to know, Krishna can reveal to that to him. Krishna says, I am the source of all knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So as the supersoul within, all knowledge can be there. And we often see that with great devotees. We saw that in Srila Prabhupada's life. Many things seem to be revealed to him that would have been beyond his sort of normal, you know, material knowledge that he would have just encountered, you know, in his life. So that's certainly something that we understand in the life of the acharyas, that Krishna's, you know, working within them and revealing many things to them. Now, we're saying spiritual knowledge can reveal phenomena, but physical knowledge cannot lead to the knowledge of the self. This is what Prabhupada says here exactly. So why not? There are two main problems here. One is that empirical knowledge is generally gained through two processes, sense perception and logic. In Western philosophy, they call it rationalism and empiricism, logic and direct perception. In the Vedic logical system, it's called anuman for logic and prachaksha, direct experience. And Prabhupada talks about these things many places in different purports. You know, all the different sources of knowledge are there. Besides those, there's also, there's logic, there's direct perception, of course, shabda. That's what we mostly rely upon, which is revealed knowledge, spiritual sound vibration. And there's a couple other ones like there's one that's called folk, like general knowledge, folk knowledge, or information. I forget the one that I was, atiya or something. There's a few others that are used, but mostly they kind of break down into these. I was reading Samacharya, I can't remember, I was reading a purport. It said there are 7 or 8 different types of information, 7 or 8 different proofs or understandings, ways that we can understand the world mentioned in different scriptures, but they say they all really break down into these. They're basically different kinds of direct perception or logical inference, or comes down to shabda, revealed knowledge. So there are many, many problems with these, and Prabhupada discusses these extensively with empirical knowledge or direct perception. The 4 defects are there. We are subject to mistakes, we have imperfect senses, we're subject to illusion, we have a propensity to cheat. So those we're very familiar with, that we cannot completely depend upon anything that our sensory information is giving us. It could be so mistaken, and of course that knowledge changes all the time, even like through scientific instruments. What you're basically doing is you're extending the imperfection of your own senses, right? You're simply taking those and extending it farther and farther. In fact, you can come farther and farther off as you continually extrapolate that knowledge onward. So, and a propensity to cheat. That's interesting because some people wonder, well, what does that mean, a propensity to cheat in terms of knowledge? Studying this a little bit, with a little bit of, academic background, believe me, this is very, very rampant. The intellectual community is well known for the cheating propensity. And we have so many times whole research studies are faked, et cetera, et cetera. So not to go into that too much, but it certainly is there and it's seen every day. Now there's a more important issue. Besides the difficulty with our senses and our logical ability to understand the world, even if we got it right, spiritual topics are really beyond direct experience. Most of the philosophical, metaphysical, spiritual questions cannot be answered simply by prachaksha or direct experience, empirical knowledge. And even those material phenomena, we often don't really understand what is the underlying causation, for instance, creation. Sometimes we can understand how something is working. Scientists can sometimes explain the mechanics of this works because of this, this, and this. But why does it work? Who has set it in motion? Who has created the laws that are governing this? You know, in other words, there just becomes a host of philosophical questions that an intelligent person would raise and not consider these adequate answers just to explain how something is working. Okay, it works like that, I can see that, or maybe explained it a little more deeply than I had seen it, but why is it working that way? Who has made it work that way? How is this important to me? How does this relate to my life? What is the purpose of my life? This goes just way beyond, what materialists are really talking about and really can understand. So, the creation development of this material world, looking at it more from the Vedic perspective, philosophical perspective, there's two perspectives. Jiva Goswami talks about this. There's the immediate material cause, which just comes from pradhana, and the remote or the spiritual cause is nimitta. So Prabhupada often talks about the immediate and the remote causes. The immediate cause is what I'm saying. This is like, it works because of this, this, and this. This is the physical phenomena. But the nimitta or the remote cause, this is the spiritual cause. What's the deeper cause behind it? Nice description of this in the Adi Lila 6:14. The verse is, just as the external energy consists of two parts, the efficient cause, nimitta, and the material cause, upadhana, Maya being the efficient cause, or Pradhana the material cause, Sir Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, assumes two forms to create the material world with the efficient and the material causes. So even if we explain how material energy combines and works, we're not really understanding necessarily the fundamental impetus for creation, which is what our scriptures give us. In a purport to that verse, Prabhupada, it's a really long verse, I'm shortening a little bit, and he quotes a lot from Baladeva Vijayabhushana's commentaries. Prabhupada says, thus, once you understand that pradhana, matter, cannot act unless impelled by a living creature. The materialistic theory that matter independently acts cannot therefore be accepted. This material world gives rise to varieties of manifestation due to the entrance of Garbhadaksha Vishnu within the universe. He is present not only within the universe, but within the bodies of all living creatures, as well as within the atom. Of course, that would be as Shiradaksha Vishnu. We understand from Brahma Sanita that the Supersoul is present within the universe, within the atom, and within the heart of every living creature. Therefore, the theory that matter is the cause of the entire cosmic manifestation cannot be accepted by any man with sufficient knowledge of matter and spirit. Another explanation of this concept, just to drill it down a little bit more. From the Srimad Bhagavatam 4:11-17, Swayambhuva Manu speaks to Dhruva. He says, my dear Dhruva, the Supreme Personality of God is uncontaminated by the material modes of nature. He is the remote cause of the creation of this material cosmic manifestation. And he gives the impetus. Many other causes and effects are produced, and thus the whole universe moves, just as iron moves by the integrated force of a magnet. So, basically, the devotees conclude that Krishna is Sarvakaranakarana. He is the ultimate cause, the cause of all causes. If you trace back, this is caused by this, this is caused by that. Well, this, even if you have a spiritual understanding, well, this is caused by Vishnu, this is caused by... You go farther and farther back, and eventually, if there's only one place, you end up, and that's Krishna. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is, of course, the not only the original personality of Godhead, he is all others come from him. He is the original Anadi, and... So this is what the devotee can understand. Now, how does this understanding come about? How does this realization of who is the ultimate cause happen? It's described that through the purified mind and senses. In other words, one who is very intelligent and one who is in the mode of goodness, the jnanis, they can understand knowledge up to the self. In other words, this is sort of the ultimate conclusion of jnana, the understanding to be able to differentiate the matter from spirit, differentiate the self as different from the material body. I'm this, the pure spirit soul, I'm not the body. And one can also understand to some degree the supreme. In the Bhagavad Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami discusses this, and he says that through the purified intelligence, through in Sattvaguna, one can infer the existence of the Supreme. In other words, you can figure it out, you can logically understand, yes, there must be a God, right? But true knowledge of Krishna comes only when he reveals himself. So ultimately, we're dependent upon Krishna to reveal himself to us to fully understand him. Not really going to be able to approach him just through some logical analysis or even understanding that I'm the spirit soul, and maybe there must be a God. No. This comes through actually realized knowledge, through vijnana. That Krishna actually, and he reveals to himself in many, many ways. Obviously through his holy name, through his deity form, through his devotees, through the scriptures, through realization of understanding of reading Srimad Bhagavatam. So there's some nice verses here that Jiva Goswami includes. Says his form is not within the perception of material senses. One cannot see his form with the material eyes, Svetashvatara Upanishad. The Lord eternally invisible is seen by his will. Without that, who can see the Lord, the Paramatma? His mercy alone is the cause, and with enthusiasm of his Shakti of mercy. Another one, finally from the Mundaka Upanishad, it says, the Lord reveals his form to whoever he chooses. So, of course, there's different levels of realization of Krishna. One level that's been discussed here is Paramatma. That Paramatma can reveal himself to the devotee through within the heart. Paramatma will give one direction, realization, inspiration, knowledge. All these things are there. They're coming from... Sometimes we don't realize that it's coming from Paramatma. It's not like we always have Paramatma realization, you know. We're not always seeing, like, six-inch Vishnu form within the heart form. No, but we can understand from its effect. We can understand that Paramatma is working within us, is directing us, is guiding us as devotees. And many times we look back at different things in our life and we say, oh yeah, Krishna must have arranged that. I can see how that happened, right? You know, sometimes right at the time, we may become a little bewildered. But Krishna has a plan for us. And Krishna is working within us. He's directing the wanderings of all living entities what to speak of his devotees. So therefore, one can realize Krishna through the Supersoul. And ultimately, Krishna will reveal himself in his pure form as Krishna, Radha Krishna, to the devotee. That may take a little time. But that will happen. Krishna will reveal himself through the process of bhakti. Says, only by undevotional service can I be known as I am, standing before you. This is his promise. This is what he says to Arjuna. So that is available to devotees to have full realization of everything, including the supreme cause of all causes, Krishna. So he's thinking that, what is the real problem for material science? What, you know, they often seem very smug, like they've got it all together and they have their understanding. But, and if they're confronted with spiritual questions, they say, well, that's not what we talk about, right? That's not our domain. You can go and talk to your priest or something about that. We're talking about science, about, you know, what's happening around us. But there's some things that they cannot easily get away from. They cannot explain away consciousness. Consciousness is a phenomena that everyone experiences, and I don't think even any scientist can say that consciousness does not exist. It obviously does. We experience it. So how do you explain it? A couple of years ago, they had the BI symposium on consciousness. It was very interesting, and all the scientists, our devotee scientists, were explaining so many ways that scientists are getting, some scientists, those who are a little more mode of goodness or devotional, devotee scientists, are explaining consciousness in terms of spiritual terms, explaining that this is something that is distinct from material energy. It's distinct from matter. And that's becoming more and more people are understanding that, at least I hope they are. Of course, we're in a very small circle. You know, we think because our scientists are understanding this that, you know, who knows, maybe nobody understands this, we saw outside of that circle. But it still, it's something that I think that can be known more and more, and by the influence, that's why this Prabhupada really, really liked the scientific preaching. You know, he just encouraged Sri Damodar Maharaj so much in the beginning, and I remember back in 76, being in Potomac, Washington, and Srila Prabhupada came, and Dina and Darshan there with the scientists, because Sri Damodar and all of them had commonly were presenting their original manuscript to, like, Life Comes from Life. I don't think it was published till several years later, actually, as I recall. But Prabhupada was very, very interested, and they presented all their theories, and he corrected some of them, you know, and they were all taking notes, yes, Prabhupada, you know, and, you know, really trying to understand it from a very deep spiritual perspective. And Prabhupada really, really liked this. He liked that we were able to approach intelligent classes of people in many areas, whether it be science, whether it be religion, whether it be, you know, scripture, whether it be... We had one devotee in Washington, D.C., his name is Holidar. He was here for a little while. I don't know if you maybe remembers Holidar. But he, I don't think he was initiated at that time, but he was, he had a PhD in economics, and he was working for the government, you know, one of the branches, commerce or something, the economics. And what was the first thing Prabhupada said to him? He says, very good. He says, use economics to whatever it was, show how Vedic systems work, or how, you know, spiritual economy. He wanted him to talk about, you know, learn. So in other words, going back to everything can be used in Krishna's service. So, but these early books, they were very influential. I mean, Life Comes from Life is one of the first ones we had. And also I remember in Sataputta Prabhu, they'd come out with, does anyone remember Mechanistic and Non-Mechanistic Science? I haven't read it for about 25, 30 years, to be honest. And I probably didn't understand 90% of it because he's way over my head. But there were two things that I remember very clearly about that. which have to do directly with what we're talking about, the limitations of scientific knowledge to understand consciousness, to understand higher spiritual knowledge. One of them was, if anyone remembers how we calculated the odds of an amino acid, which I guess is an important building block in living organisms. They're groups of proteins that come together, form a molecule, an amino acid. And he said, for that to come about by chance, and he calculated how it would take trillions and trillions of years to, by chance, create one amino acid, right? What to speak of an actual cell, an actual body, and then what to speak of a fully formed human being with higher consciousness, intelligence, and creativity, and, you know, so many things. So, I mean, it's like, come on, this just doesn't even make sense. So these are things that it's hard for them to confront. The other one I remember that he talked about was the law of entropy, the second law of thermodynamics. Everyone remembers that one, right? No. Basically, the law of entropy states, I just got a quote, I just had to look this up this morning, as one goes forward in time, the net entropy, which is the degree of disorder of any isolated and closed system, will always increase. In other words, things become more disordered. Things become more chaotic unless there is external energy applied to the system. This is very important in systems theories in many different fields, actually. So the idea is there has to be an outside source of energy to preserve any sense of order. Now, if we look around us, what do we see in the universe? It seems pretty ordered, doesn't it? Very highly organized. I mean, do we see it chaotic? Do we see that some days only have 22 hours and some days have 28 hours? And, you know, no. I mean, everything is completely organized, created. In fact, the scientists even say that order is increasing. Because they're saying we started with these, the primordial soup and, you know, got all these amino acids and cells. I'm totally oversimplifying this, so anyone who has a scientific knowledge, forgive me. You know, but basically it all came together and somehow by chance we ended up with, animals and plants and human beings. So in other words, that seems to indicate increasing order, doesn't it? We're becoming more organized, more sophisticated, more and more higher forms are being created. So that cannot happen by scientific theory unless there is outside energy put into the system. And it would obviously have to be an organizing system, which implies an intelligent outside energy coming. And of course, this is why many of the sort of the Christian scientists have come up with this idea of intelligent design, it's a good theory, it's the way they say it. They're saying, okay, we agree all this is happening, but there has to be some intelligent design behind it, right? There has to be someone, some consciousness, higher consciousness, which is more or less organizing everything to happen. Otherwise, everything would basically fall apart, and we'd be back to the primordial soup again, or some kind of, you know, chaotic situation. So these are problems. For the scientists, so they don't really explain. Now, not every scientist is like this. Sometimes scientists can understand. We have a certain limitation of knowledge, but we don't understand these higher causes. I think I mentioned this one very recently in class, but it's one of my favorites, is Isaac Newton. Very, very famous science. He came up with laws of motion and I don't know what all the, you know, gravity, all these things. Many, many fundamental principles that are known and used today from like 200 years ago. But my favorite quote from him, and he says, gravity explains the motions of the planets, but it cannot explain who set the planets in motion. God governs all things and knows all that is or can be done. So all he was doing was discovering, okay, this is the way God's doing it. Here's some of the details of how God's working. You know, and so he was kind of an honest scientist. That's what we like to see. You know, today they'll think, no, actually we can control everything. Pretty soon we'll cure disease, people will live forever. You know, so many claims. Prabhupada always says, you know, what do you say, post-dated blank check the scientists give? Someday we will create life, someday you'll live forever. Yeah, someday. So we accept real authority, which is the third way of knowing beyond pratyaksha, beyond anuman, which is shabda praman, descending knowledge, hearing from authority. And this authority is also, sometimes you might say, okay, you just accept on faith. Well, it's also corroborated by experience. There's a pratyaksha to spiritual knowledge as well, a direct experience. And Prabhupada says, this is from, of course, Bhagavad Gita, this knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization. Direct perception, direct experience, perception. It is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting and joyfully performed. Srila Prabhupada says, and I'll end with this quote, "It is said that the execution of devotional service is so perfect that one can perceive the results directly. This direct result is actually perceived, and we have practical experience that any person who is chanting the holy names of Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, in course of chanting without offenses, feels some transcendental pleasure, and very quickly becomes purified of all material contamination. This is actually seen. Furthermore, if one engages not only in hearing, but in trying to broadcast the message of devotional activities as well, or if he engages himself in helping the missionary activities of Krishna consciousness, he gradually feels spiritual practice." So, yes, we agree. Spiritual knowledge should also be backed by logic and direct experience. But it's a spiritual logic and a spiritual experience, and that actually can be understood and perceived as Srila Prabhupada is discussing here. Okay. Thank you so much for all your patience and listening. Any questions, comments? Yeah. Yes.
Yes, you said that Shabda is beyond Pratyaksha, but Pratyaksha means sensual knowledge.
I'm sorry?
Sensual. Pratyaksha is sensual knowledge received through the senses, correct?
Yes.
So that senses include hearing, and Shabda is also hearing. So, also, you quoted some verses about how Krishna can only be understood. He has to be revealed one to. So when we come before the deities, is Krishna revealing himself, or is this is only pratyaksha?
This is the classic question of how do we perceive the spiritual, which is beyond the material senses, by using these material senses? And that was the question that was asked and is described in the chapter of the prayers by personified Vedas. Is that 87? 10th canto, 87. And that was a very, very long philosophical explanation of exactly the question you're asking. It's a great question, and it would take me a whole other class to give it justice. But basically, I think the purport is it happens through spiritualized senses. In other words, the senses, by contact with spiritual items, with Krishna, anything to do with Krishna, these very senses within this material body become spiritualized so that they can perceive, spiritual matters, spiritual things. Without that, there's no way. You're right. Our limited sense of hearing, our limited sense of seeing, could not appreciate those things. But by Krishna's mercy, as is described, by the mercy of the Lord, and by our sincere attempts of purifying those senses, then they become spiritualized and are able to start to perceive spiritual essence. And Steve, can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, sure, why not? but I, as I was driving over, I heard you nailed it on the noumenal definition. Numinous.
Was that right?
I looked it up because I didn't want to.
Okay, I was hoping you'd be here to confirm or correct me.
No, he was. I heard you mention my name. I wasn't here to be a pain in the neck about that. But on the senses, though, one sense. The spiritual senses are our original senses, and if we're considering it that the spiritual form is essential to the self and it's now covered over, those spiritual senses are always there. So in one sense, it's not like we purify the material senses and then we can see it.
Yeah.
It's we sort of purify ourselves and get the material senses out of the way, that we're not like identifying and, restricted by them. Sadhaputta brings up, I think it's...
Oh, wait, let me just, before we go on to Sadhaputta, explain, that was a great way of explaining it. Yes, we have the purified senses within us.
Yeah.
The spiritual body is within and it's covered. And so it's really a process of uncovering and allowing those spiritual senses to come forward and perceive spiritual Krishna.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it kind of flips it. You purify them, that's just language. Well, you're not physically getting them out of the way,
purification,
get out of the way.
I think you're saying the same thing.
Can I intervene in this one? When you say spiritual, when you say spiritual, Yeah.
You need a microphone if you're going to speak.
They can hear, I'm lousy.
Okay.
When it's a spiritual life, means it is going towards Krishna. Spiritualized is not spiritualized if it is not going towards Krishna.
Right.
So that's my point. Is like when the devotional attitude arrives, that is called spiritualized.
Right. It's in contact with Krishna.
Correct.
It becomes spiritualized.
Correct. Then the original senses will be activated.
Then they will become activated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think we're all on the same page on this now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't care who's right as long as I'm right.
Anyway, you can ask him about Sataputta. I know you studied a lot.
Oh, the Sataputta thing, yeah. I think the original title was Parallels, but I think it's Alien Identities, or maybe Maya, and we republished it as Parallels. But he's talking about out-of-body experiences, you know, the documentation of them, and then these people come back, you know, when they re-enter, and, you know, they save the patient, so-called, and they talk about it. It's like he was describing in these descriptions that are given, it's like you're seeing, like, almost three-dimensionally, and, you know, it's just like you're seeing with in ways that we don't ordinarily consider visually seeing. I mean, the senses seem to, their description of the events, not only are they seeing it from outside the body, but it's like, you have to read it. It's like a three-dimensional seeing. Well, you ordinarily see three-dimensional, but it was an interesting description that suggested that our natural sense perception is far exceeds what we currently are restricted to by identifying with them to the senses.
Welcome to Alachua. Good to see you again.
In other words, we don't need our material eyes to see. Spiritually.
Ultimately not.
Yeah, because...
Well, you might in the material world, I'm not sure, you know.
Yeah.
But you're not going to... When we go to the spiritual world, we're not going to need these material senses anymore. No. They're an artificial imposition on the soul.
So... I was running through the Vishnu Purana last night about the imperceptible, how it can be perceived. Well, you know, hearing from authorities, but also through yoga, through the process of yoga, the soul and the super soul can be perceived. I mean, it's an experimental way. I mean, sometimes a challenge to the scientists.
Well, see, that's a process above dhyana.
Yeah, yeah.
See,
if the only way to see the soul and the super soul, go into meditation. That's a challenge, and I mean it's possible, but that's the only way. You know, that's the only means really.
Isn't it easier just to chant Hare Krishna and Krishna will reveal himself as the super soul?
Yeah, yeah. But if you're looking for, you know,
I like the easy process. Anything on the lady's side before, you know, over here?
I was just thinking that was the time.
Actually, wait for the microphone.
You know, the verse in the Nectar of Devotion, Atashri Krishna Navavi,
yes.
Well, it's very difficult to understand Krishna with one's blunt material senses, but when one purifies the senses by chanting the holy name and tasting the Lord's prasad, then one can understand who Krishna really is. So there's a process that ties in with what's already been said.
That's a very, very famous verse from... Which Upanishad is it from?
Rupa Goswami.
Which is it?
From Nectar of the Goswami.
Oh, I know, but it's from Upanishad. He quotes it. It's Sri Tashri. I know, that's okay.
No,
I know what the Nectar of the Goswami
is. Atta Sri Krishna Namati. Atta Sri Krishna Namati, no Bhavit Gajji Vidhi.
Yeah.
That's Rupa
Goswami. Oh, is it? Rick? Oh, okay. I was thinking another one. Okay, go ahead.
I have just two comments. One comment is, if scientific chaos law works, and I didn't have to worry about cleaning my house. It would be always organized. But it never happens. Scientists, they say from the chaos, everything organized comes. If that is true, I don't have to clean my house. It will be always organized, but it's opposite. And the other comment is, I just participate in the conference in Orlando for teachers of mathematics, and two out of four biggest presenters started their presentation with Vedic math.
With what?
Vedic math, mathematics. Uh-huh. One of them showed Vedic square, the other one Vedic multiplication, and that was the most interesting point. Yeah. So, like you said, Prabhupada gave us so much, we need to give it out. So
it's starting to get out there a little bit, you're saying, and it's starting to influence people in the
Not as devotees that we are showing, but even the other that are not devotees, they find that this knowledge and consider it to be so amazing and interesting, so much so that they start their presentations with that.
No, that's good. That's great. Thank you for sharing that.
Yes, earlier you said that the cheating propensity is rampant amongst intellectual circles.
I may have exaggerated that a bit, but I would say that, yes.
What way does that show up? On what level? Every teacher is a cheater?
I would say more in the upper levels of those who are actually conducting research. And I'll give you an example. There was a Korean professor, whatever, a few years ago, who did this thing about cloning a sheep. And it was all written up about how now they've been able to successfully clone a sheep. And it turned out that was completely fabricated. He was actually sued, and he just was, thrown out of his position, everything. He had an entire study of this amazing thing, this big breakthrough in genetics, and almost like creating life. Didn't happen. He fabricated the whole thing. That's an extreme example, but yeah, it happens.
Fossil records, he said.
The fossils to show that there's a link from the apes to man.
The missing link,
Yeah,
and part of it is, that's just an example, some of it's more subtle. It's not even necessarily that they're outright trying to deceive, but they don't really know, so they fake it a little bit. Like that, like the missing link. Where's the missing link? We don't know anything about, what the missing link. In other words, they overstate their case. They overstate the amount of proof and information they really have. And, Judah Karma's done a lot of work on this, with his stuff on evolution like that. And he's got, this thick book that shows how they basically haven't really proven evolution at all. And in fact, I keep looking up for statistics on this because I think it's an important point. At least 50% of scientists in the field do not believe in Darwinian evolution theory. That doesn't mean they believe in Krishna as a creator, but it means it's just so full of holes they can't accept it.
Exactly. But they teach it in schools.
And they still teach it. Now, that's cheating. See, that's cheating.
That's politics. That has to do with politics.
Politics.
Yeah.
Well, probably. I'm sure it's... whatever it is, it's,
Steve
Diaz rebuttal. Go ahead. Did you have more to... Go ahead.
She wants me to say something.
Thank you
for a very interesting class. I was just thinking of the role of pratyaksha within Shabda, and of course you quoted Jiva Goswami about that, and Prabhupada also quotes in 9.2. But there are some things that cannot be experienced within the material world. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about that in Jaiva Dharma, which is the conundrum of, Jiva Rasurupaya Nitya Krishna Das, so we're eternally servants of Krishna, but at some point in the material world, we're not feeling that. So that conundrum, that, he says, can only be solved when we go back to the spiritual world. So it's not something... from my understanding, that we cannot explain it. It's something that has to be understood when we actually go back to the spiritual world. So what I'm saying is some things we can have perception, we can feel, we can experience Krishna consciousness, the aspects, but...
are you saying that the full knowledge of really totally understanding Krishna, our relationship and everything is... We have to be in the spiritual world.
No, I wasn't talking about that. The specific point that he addresses is the conundrum of how someone
who is eternally a servant of Krishna, the aspect of time, because that's inconceivable, because in the spiritual world there's no past, present, or future, it's just eternal present. So for our brains to understand, how is it, if we're eternally servants of Krishna, how have we come here?
Oh yeah, that one. That's always a conundrum, isn't
right.
it?
So that one particular aspect cannot be experienced here.
Right, and I'm going to leave it at that, because that one is up.
But that's the answer. That's the answer that Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives. Yeah. He himself says that.
She's right, because once you get back to the spiritual world, you don't care about it anymore.
Yes.
Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada said that once. They asked him, they said, will we remember that we were in the material world and I go back? He said, oh, he said, this kind of like maybe a vague bad dream. You know, you don't, you know. Do you want to keep thinking about the bad dream you had? No.
Hare Krishna. Someone asked a question about where's the evidence that there's so much cheating in science?
I'm sorry,
and
evidence of what?
Cheating.
Yeah.
In science. And you said it was primarily in scientific papers and that kind of research. Mm-hmm. And it's true, if you look online, there have been studies done to see what percentage of scientific research is reproducible. And you can find articles that describe that 60% of scientific papers are not reproducible.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
And another example is, I remember about 2 years ago, there were two scientists who published a paper. One of them was from Japan. I don't remember the subject, but what struck me was the paper was proven to be fraudulent, and the Japanese scientist committed suicide.
It was fraudulent, you think?
It was fraudulent, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's another one example I remember, kind of a slightly different, was one scientific researcher just wanted to do kind of a spoof, and so he just wrote this completely nonsense article. It was about phenomenology and, you know, things like that, and, you know, sort of semi-philosophical scientific, and he had some title that was in, you know, and he got all these good reviews on it, and they actually published it. And actually, it was just nonsense. He knew it was. He was just seeing whether people...
Yes, that was a famous one. I need to make one other real quick point. I was announced this morning as a visiting devotee from Dallas. My name is Shaldran. But I wanted to also introduce my wife, Kunti Devi Dasi, also from Dallas.
Welcome.
To leave her out.
Welcome, everyone.
Oh, speaking of cheating, now that I've realized it, also in history, different countries will portray and present different narrations about a historical event, depending, and I think influenced by politics.
Oh, yeah.
Not different countries, but even different sections of the United States.
Oh, yeah. If you ever watch any like documentaries or anything from UK, they invented everything. You know, like it's like they never heard of Thomas Edison. You know, no, I mean it's they have their own perspective of history. Let's put it that way. You know, and we have our own perspective, which may be half truth also.
Every jiva has their own perspective.
There you go.
But I mean, as far as scientists, they're conditioned souls. They're just conditioned souls. And they're dealing with empirical sense perception. So, of course, there's all kinds of anomalies. We were kind of raised up, I think, our generational experience, for those who are of that generation. You know, that science somehow is going to find certain knowledge, and it's just like the past is now relevant. Intellectuals don't think like that anymore. Some people still do. You know, it's called postmodernity. I mean, some people still do and always will, but it's not like the dominant thing that's, you know, and the other thing is a lot of us kind of stopped going, you know, to school in high school and maybe some early undergraduate work. And their textbooks, it's just sort of the pattern that was, you know, this is sort of the conventional wisdom. You got to find a base, you know, this is this basic narrative. And then when you actually start studying it, it's full of complications. So, you know, yeah. We all do that to some degree. You go to the Sunday feast, I mean, you're a Christian, it sounds like Christian consciousness is just a hop, skip, and a jump, you know? And you know, it's, every day is another cup of sweet rice, you know? But, no, I mean, it, you know, it's an inviting thing, but as we practice it, boy, there's a lot of twists and turns, and we got to go deep in the heart, and there's complications. I'm not saying we're conditioned, you know. So science is full of complications, they're conditioned souls. Sure, culture invests a certain reputation and authority in it, but they're just conditioned souls. You know, and you know, and they have this theory of evolution, and to some degree, maybe it matches some observations, but there's plenty of areas where it doesn't, but that pertains to all sorts of conditional perceptions.
I make two short comments. Yeah. One, I think you're right from a historical perspective, because my generation, and I mean just a little older than you maybe. No, we thought this is absolute truth. Follow science, they know it all. And so as when we became devotees, we kind of like, what? And we went like reject it all, throw it all out, because now we realize these people are complete nonsense, you know. But no, yes, I think now it has become more nuanced, like it. And just as you said, they're conditioned souls and they make mistakes like everyone else out there is making mistakes. The problem is that Prabhupada is objected to is because how influential they are. Because they have the potential to mislead people away from spiritual life.
Yeah, I mean, it isn't just preached and the strength of the sciences.
Right, so that's the concern. In other words, all right, if they were just making the same mistakes in their mind as the mechanic down the street was, I mean, you know, big deal. But it's because they can have so much influence. In fact, you know, when you think about it, Prabhupada's criticisms of the materialists were really two classes. He did not criticize other religions. He didn't criticize that much the average person, except in general, you know. He criticized material atheistic material scientists and Mayavadis, right? People who were misleading people away from Krishna. That was the problem. Okay? And that's what we object to. Not that the average person has got a little bit of muddy ideas and doesn't know what's going on. That is what preaching is about. That's what our movement is about. Correcting those mistakes, getting, at least those who will understand, which is still probably a small handful, those who will appreciate higher knowledge and trying to give it to them. Prabhupada said, we're preaching to the innocent, right? We're not preaching to that small percentage of hardcore atheists. That's a small percentage. Prabhupada said most people are in the innocent class. That's who our movement is aimed at, bringing the innocent people back to Krishna. Okay? I think we should end. We're way over time. I appreciate
that's
your patience.
That's the intermediate platform. You avoid minority, non-devotional, demoniac mentality.
Right.
Innocent is like 93%.
Okay.
After that, it's
like... Oh, there's a Shiva Prabhupada.
Jack Shiva Prabhupada.